Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist here at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And occasionally, pretty much we do this in the spring, the summer, maybe into the fall when the insects are most active. We ask him if he would come on the program and answer questions about dealing with insect pests around the home. And he's always been very good about saying, well, yeah, sure, I'll come over and do that. I'll help you out. The idea is that if you have some kind of bug that's causing a problem, can be in the house, can be in the garden, so it could be something that would be attacking your ornamentals or your vegetable crops, or maybe it's just something that's, who knows, in the house, and you cannot live with this thing, Phil will tell you what to do about it. So that's it, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll take as many folks as we can. Thanks very much for being here.
Glad to be here.
This would be the time, I guess, that if people were going to treat for the grubs in the lawn, they would be doing it. And we were just talking here a little bit about the fact that as far as the beetles, the Japanese beetles are concerned, wasn't too bad. And so it sounds as if you're saying, you know, you probably don't need to do it at all.
You certainly don't need to do it preventatively. You need to look to see if you've got a problem before you treat. And that can be done by taking a fairly heavy knife and cutting through the sod. I usually like to do it about a foot on each side. Pull it back, and if you have 10 to 12 or more per foot square of grubs, then you should be treating. The grubs themselves get up. Right now they're about a half an inch long. They'll get up to an inch long, and they're white and C-shaped, and they'll be right there in the root zone. If the soil's a little dry, they may be down two or three or four inches, and you can just kind of till the soil with your knife that you dug, opened it up with, and find out whether there's anything down in there as well. The reason we don't have as many is we got some pretty cold temperatures last winter that froze fairly deeply into the ground around in central Illinois. We got probably 14, 15 inches of frost that hung on for about 7 weeks, somewhere around in there. And then in northern Illinois, it got even down a little bit deeper, probably 18, 20 inches, and hung around for probably about 8 weeks. And white grubs, the Japanese beetle white grubs, don't normally go down any more than about 11 inches, most of them. Few go deeper. And they can put up with being frozen solid for about 3 weeks, and then they start to die off. So anytime you have soil frozen for several couple weeks after 3 weeks and it gets down at least a foot deep, we can assume there's going to be probably some dieback. And it looks to me like we've got about a third to a quarter of what we would normally have in the way of adult beetles, which means fewer eggs laid. And then also with the amount of rainfall we had this year, we get the beetles will tend to go to green grass, soft soils, that sort of thing. With the amount of rainfall, everything's that way. In a normal year, it's just the irrigated lawn. So they focus and concentrate all their eggs in small areas. This year, they're laying their eggs all over everywhere because everywhere's fine. And that means that there's fewer per square foot in individual lawns. If you do need to treat for white grubs, we recommend at this time of year material that's triclorfan. You'll find that sold under the brand name of Dylox, D-Y-L-O-X. And this will kill the grubs in 3 days, only lasts for 5 days, so you need to make sure the grubs are there before you treat.
All right. Let me give our telephone number, by the way, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. You have questions, you can give us a call. The Japanese beetles will eat a lot of things. There are some things that they really like. And it might be that people have, you know, got a lot of damage on particular plants. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything about that now. We're done. Next year, though, say you have something in particular, roses, for example. They really like roses. There are some other things they like. And you wanted to treat early on just that particular plant. Mm-hmm. When would be the and now is there something you can apply to this that's going to be systemic that will be taken
up? Yes.
When do you do that for the first time?
Well, you can do it now if you want to, because but we normally recommend that it be done at least 2 months before you need it. You're going to need it about the end of June, which means that you need to have it in by the end of April of 2010. Okay. And what this is imidacloprid. It's sold as Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Control. And the material, once it gets into the plant, lasts for a year. That's why I said you can do it now if you want to.
Oh, okay.
Because it will still be there at this time next year. And the beetles are heaviest from the first part of, latter part of June, first part of July, through about the middle of August. And so that will give you the amount of time you need. I think you're going to get a little better uptake in the spring. You're going to be sure you have it there in good shape. And essentially, you're looking to protect those plants that really aren't going to have a lot of where the insecticide isn't going to get out into the blossoms and be a problem to bees and other pollinators. And May, following me, may have more to say about that. She just got on the BBC nationwide yesterday.
Really?
So, yeah, it's kind of neat. Worldwide, I guess, when it's BBC. But at any rate, we do know that imidacloprid will go out into the blossoms of linden trees, so you may want to – that's a major food source and something that honeybees come to a lot, mm-hmm. and other pollinators, so you might want to avoid that. But things such as crab apples and serviceberry and so on, even though they have flowers that bees come to, apparently the imidacloprid molecule doesn't get out into the flowers, so it protects the leaves without being a problem to pollinators. Similarly, on your roses, particularly if you have some of the roses that are multi double roses or so on, the fancier roses, and you don't see any bees and so on being interested in them, that's probably because the pollen and the nectar has been bred out of them, and they're fine to treat as well. Mm-hmm. They insects will tend to be most attracted to a lot of different things, but most heavily to trees in the rose family, which are crab apples, hawthorn, serviceberry, roses, these sorts of things. They also get on the brambles. And then also linden trees, birch trees, willow trees. Those are the big ones that they really, really like.
Okay. So you might want to, if you have some of these plants and if you don't want them to get really damaged, maybe get your calendar out or, you know,
right.
Make yourself a note for April of next year. Mm-hmm. Now would be the time to start to think about doing something.
Particularly if we continue to have good moisture levels through the balance of the late summer, early fall. The Japanese beetle grubs, when they hatch, need 11 inches of moisture in order to make it through the fall. And so if we, as long as we don't get a drought, those beetles grubs should be doing quite fine, thank you. And considering that if they don't get frozen out this winter, which they probably won't, usually when we get cold weather, we get snow, which helps keep the soil from getting cold too deep. So they'll be back next spring and in higher numbers than they were this year, so you kind of need to be ready for them.
Okay. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580 is Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois, and he is here to help with insect pest problems around the home. Can be inside the house, can be in the yard, can be something going after ornamental plants, or if you have some vegetable issues. I know, last time Sandy was here, we had some squash bug questions. Any and all that's certainly fine. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You know, one just sort of practical question I had. If you you have some kind of garden problem and maybe you've determined, you know what it is and you know what you're going to do about that, so you go out and get some pesticide, but maybe mm-hmm. you only use part of it. Mm-hmm. And then you take that pesticide and you put it in your shed or you put it in your garage. Are these chemicals affected by freezing, and should they actually be inside where they're kept at a warmer temperature year round?
They're not affected, most of them, by freezing as much as they are by heat. Most of them will start to break apart at 110, 120 degrees Fahrenheit and disassociate. Once they disassociate or separate into various parts, commonly they will not, if you shake them up, they won't come back together. So uh-huh. they essentially become unuseful. Non-useful anymore. That's on the liquid materials, and even those that are dry materials, they may be broken down at higher temperatures. So we try to avoid making sure that people primarily don't store them, you know, in a shed with a metal roof right up against the roof where it's likely to get to 120 degrees on a hot. It may be only 90 outside, but it may be 120 underneath that roof of that shed. So those are the main things that you can be concerned about. Wintertime, some of them are susceptible to freezing. Generally, it takes fairly cold conditions for them to get to freeze. And if they do freeze, many of them will not disassociate. Some will. So they're less likely to be bothered by freezing than they are warm temperatures. Those that are affected by freezing many times will have something on the label about that. It used to be we had a lot of them that way, but not so much anymore. But still, it's a good reason to store them somewhere where temperatures are moderate. Myself, I have a crawl space area in my basement that's where I store my pesticides in, and so it's away from the main part of the house, but it's still buffered from the severe temperatures. Yeah.
What sort of shelf life do these products have?
Most pesticides will have a shelf life of about 5 years that you can count on.
And so, then after that, you expect you would recommend that you actually save these things for when there's a household hazardous waste sort of thing. Don't pour them down the drain.
Yeah. Either use them up or else use them in a toxic waste cleanup day sort of thing. And you can find out when those are occurring by going to the Illinois EPA website, and they will have where there are pickup cleanup days each year around the state. We've been fortunate to have good support here in Champaign Urbana area. The Champaign County group has supported those a couple, three or four times in the last few years. So it's normally not more than about 5 or 6, 7 years before you have another one roll around. But generally, you try to not buy too much ahead. If you do need to get rid of it, it is legal to put homeowner size containers of pesticides, the stuff that you would buy in a hardware store or and so on, in the trash. We recommend putting them in a plastic bag and having them labeled so that the trash handler is not at risk on it as well. But that is a legal thing. But on the other side of a coin, the old rule of thumb always is it's not if landfills leak, it's when. So so it's a matter of if you can avoid putting them in landfill, that's a good idea. And certainly you don't ever want to get them into a water stream.
Yeah, right. All right. Questions are welcome here for our guest, Phil Nixon, 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Got a caller here to start us off. Jasper County, I think. Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm wondering if moles eat the Japanese beetle grubs.
They will to a certain extent. Moles are primarily going to be earthworm feeders. Over half their diet are earthworms, and then around a quarter of their diet are plant materials. But the other quarter, or a little bit less than that, are going to be various insects they happen to find. And so, yes, they do feed on grubs, but no, they don't make a major difference. And no, they're not there because you have grubs.
Okay.
Common misconception.
We had so many moles, I would say the last 10 years. So many more. And I also noticed there were a lot more Japanese beetles, and I wondered if there was a connection.
Yeah, a common misconception is if you get rid of the grubs, you get rid of the moles. Years ago, that kind of worked. Materials that we had, I think, were smelly enough that it actually stunk the moles out of the yard. Things like diazinon and Dursban and so on, you applied them, and your yard kind of reeked for a couple, 3 days, and it was probably much worse underneath the soil, particularly if something that finds its food by smelling it out like a mole does. That would probably be a real rough way to go. So I think what we did was we put on some really smelly insecticides that we had at the time, and they literally just left the yard because they couldn't stand the odor. Now we have materials that what is used today are a lot less odorous, and every year I get calls of people saying, "Now, I put out my white grub material, and I still got grubs." And I go, "Yeah, because they're feeding on the earthworms and the insecticide." That's a testimony to the insecticide we use for grubs not being terribly nasty to the earthworms. It does kill a few, but not very many. And so generally what we recommend for mole control is a couple of different things. One is that is the mole traps, and you find areas where the tunnels are straight. You'll have kind of curved tunnels at dead end. Those are feeding tunnels. The mole went down and turned around and came back. But the straight tunnels that join up with other tunnels are ones that the moles use on pretty much a daily basis. We've actually, some recent research indicates that are actually earthworm traps. Interesting feature is that when earthworms are going through the soil, if they come across a mole tunnel, instead of going straight through the tunnel, it's an open area, and they'll turn and they'll start crawling down the tunnel. And the mole just comes by every day or two and just gobbles up all the earthworms that are kind of in that trap that he's made in a straight tunnel. So you mash down a portion of that, put the trap across that, and the mole, when it comes down, will spring the trap and either be harpooned to death or squeezed to death. Both are kill the mole, but death is very quick and probably somewhat humane that way. There's also a bait called talpirid, T-A-L-P-I-R-I-D, and that's put in the form of plastic worms, earthworm-like things, that you put into the mole tunnels, and the moles will eat that and get killed by it. It's pretty effective, and it's available at hardware stores and garden centers. But you will tend to have moles as long as you have an area nearby where moles are reproducing, and that's going to be any natural area, you know, alongside a pond or a wooded area or a pasture or something of this nature. The moles are reproducing there, and generally you get moles coming in spring and fall from those areas, and what you're getting are the adolescent moles, the young moles. Mom and dad essentially chase them out of their range when they get grown up big enough to be kind of a pain, and they have to go make it on their own, and that's when they come into people's yards.
Well, I don't try to eradicate them. It's a big farmstead with a large yard, and I just mow over them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting.
I live with them, you know.
An interesting sidelight is that commonly when I tell people this, that you've got a natural area somewhere, and, you know, once that fills in with houses, you probably won't have a mole problem. Their response is, well, I guess the moles aren't that bad after all. In other words, they'd rather have moles than people, which
right.
is kind of a testimony to to the way people are important to them.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Right,
you're
welcome.
Thank you. Other questions are certainly welcome. Phil Nixon is our guest. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I, and he is on the program every once in a while, and we talk about dealing with insect pests pretty much around the home, but he's got the mole thing down too.
Oh, yeah.
He'll tell you what to do about your moles, but basically the idea is if you have, I don't know, spiders, ants, roaches, silverfish, or you got bugs in
something
the
eating
yard,
your trees or shrubs.
Eating your trees and shrubs, call and tell us about it, and he'll tell you what to do. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's go to line one. Someone on a cell phone right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a couple of problems. One is that we have a sort of an overhang shed-like roof that goes over our porch, and there's a puddle out in front in our street the city won't eradicate, so we constantly are breeding mosquitoes that then come underneath that shed roof, and we can't use our door. We've been putting little pellets of things to kill the mosquitoes in the puddle, but is there anything you can – we have a child in the house. Is there anything we can do to keep that doorway open?
If you can – one thing that might work for just a small area like that and just one particular area is a fan which blows across that area will probably keep them away.
Oh, even though they're kind of breeding up underneath the...
Yeah, even though the mosquitoes, in order to hover and be able to fly and so on, can't handle much more than a 7-mile-an-hour wind, which is kind of a low speed on a window fan. So... So any type of a fan blowing across that area, and they have a lot of inexpensive small fans that you can buy now that are even run off batteries and things of this nature. In the time of day when you might want to be going in and out, just having that there will probably blow the mosquitoes off course to where they can't really really find you, light on you, or even really be in that particular area. Insecticide-wise, there's not much of an option because things will break down relatively quickly. Materials we use for mosquitoes usually don't last that long. One exception is permethrin, which you'll find is 8-insect control or other types of brand names. And permethrin sprayed on surfaces should give about a week of control, maybe 10 days. So
I think maybe I'll go with the fan.
The fan seems to be, you know, a pretty good idea. Of course, the other thing is mosquitoes are highly attracted to lights at night, and avoiding having the porch light on would make a big difference there.
Don't have a porch light.
Okay.
Since you did moles, I'm going to ask you another question on that very same porch that I, you know, the little doorway that I'm not using. They're little black pellets every day looking like some animal is using it as their defecation point. Is there anything I can do to discourage that?
Well, there's a couple things. One is that some of the rabbit and deer repellents that are on the market in hardware stores and garden centers and so on will have an active ingredient of thiram, T-H-I-R-A-M. Others will have naphthalene, and that's not near as effective. But thiram applied in that area should last for a couple weeks in warmer conditions and a couple months during the wintertime. That will help. Another repellent is called Ropel, R-O-P-E-L, and that can also be applied in that area following label directions, and that will repel them. You might also want to look to see if there's any evidence of any burrowing or an opening there that an animal is getting back underneath and closing that off, putting moth crystals down in there to flush them out first, and then closing that off with cement or rocks or something like that may cause the animal to go elsewhere.
Thank you. You've been very helpful.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Do all of those repellents essentially smell like that? They smell like moth crystals?
No, they really don't. The thyram doesn't have much of an odor at all. But the Ropel, if you get down real close to it, you'll notice it. A lot of it depends on your sense of smell. I have a lousy sense of smell, so I usually don't have to worry about it. As I'm told, I have no taste. That's related to smell. So, but at any rate, a lot of them don't smell like moth crystals, and really the naphthalene or moth crystals are very effective in an enclosed area, such as what I recommended to her if she found a burrow or something like that, because there it's an enclosed area. But if you have them out in the open, generally they're not enough to be a problem. I always like to say that you need to have a moth crystals fumes heavy enough that if you were in there, you'd be coughing and wheezing and your eyes would be watering. That's what you have to do to the critter you're trying to repel, and it works very well on most mammals.
Okay. On to another caller here, and we have somebody. This is also Champagne and line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Funny problem with some flies. I rarely see a fly inside my house except about once a year in one certain window. All of a sudden, there'll be maybe two dozen, and they're very hard to scare. They're calm, sluggish flies.
Okay.
I might get rid of them and come back a couple hours later, and there's another couple dozen. Are these what they call cluster flies?
Could be. They have a tendency to be sluggish and not easily scared. What is there a particular time of the year that you see them?
It's always in the summer.
Okay.
I would say it happened about July this year.
Okay. Well, that's probably not cluster flies. Cluster flies are flies whose larvae feed on earthworms. And they will come into houses to spend the winter. So generally people are seeing cluster flies coming out usually when it's starting to get warm in the latter part of a winter, usually February, late January, things of this nature. But during this time of the year, they should be outside looking for earthworms to lay their eggs near. So they're probably not cluster flies at this time of year. Perhaps a more likely situation might be that there may be an area there where mice are getting in or something of this nature, and then these are coming from that carcass that might be there. A mouse will produce 100 flies or so, and some of them, most of them may be going outside and you're not seeing them. Maybe some area along the outside, along your foundation or something where critters tend to get in, and that may be the only place they can get in around the whole area. That's why you tend to have them in that same place. Do the flies tend to be have a metallic green or blue body, or are they just kind of blackish looking?
I think there's some metallic.
Okay. If they are metallic, then that almost assuredly means that they are blowflies, which their larvae specialize on feeding on doing funeral operations, cleaning out the dead bodies, so to speak.
Yeah.
So they're carrion feeders, and that's probably the source, and it would be... You know, if something happened to have gotten in there in the wintertime and died there, it might take as late as June or July for the flies to be showing up, or they may be feeding on there and going out primarily. But when it gets into the warmer months, they will go to at that time of year cooler areas, and so your air conditioning may be bringing a few into the inside. But I think you're seeing a small portion of what's being produced in all likelihood.
It's a new window. I don't think they can get in there, but it amazes me because it is always the same one. So that might argue for what you're saying.
Well, what will happen is wherever they come out on that side of a house, they're going to go to that window. Flies go to light to try to get away. And so if they're coming out on any side of that house, if that happens to be the brightest point, they are going to go to that window, regardless of how tight the window is. They're trying to get out. Otherwise, they'll come up through... And how do they get into the room otherwise? Cracks and crevices around baseboards, areas around the window framing, and even a fairly new window, it doesn't take long before you got some gaps there because the soil moves enough that the house will move slightly, and all of a sudden you've got a small gap and a fly can squeeze through. So you're probably true. It's probably around the sash itself. It's probably tight to where they can't get into that area, but I think they're probably coming out in the room in the early morning hours. They typically will emerge just before dawn, and they're going to go to the brightest light they can find. That's probably that window.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Thank you. And we'll go on here to another caller. This is line one, also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had problems with rodents, I think mice, presumably, and maybe even squirrels climbing into my engine compartment in the truck and eating my wiring harness.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, and I think they're attracted to the warmth of the engine, probably. I've used mothballs with some limited success, I think. But, man, when you first turn the heater on, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, yeah. We happen to have a vehicle that's had that happen three times in the wintertime, and I've talked to mechanics and so on. Can't you put screen wire there or something? Oh, there's no place we can do that, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, the engine compartment's pretty big. They can climb anywhere there.
Right, in the engine compartment anywhere, but we've had them three times getting into the heating system, and it's not a happy thing to be driving down the road at 5 degrees temperature if a window's down because you can't stand the inside smell.
The heater box is out is a day-long job.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact, they did that for mechanics did, and I says, while you're at it, you know, look at the intakes and see if there you can put some screening on there. A quarter-inch screening will keep all the mice out.
Yep.
Oh, it's not made that way. Well, all right. My only suggestion and what we've tried to do in my own situation is we happen to have a few cats, so we try to encourage a cat to hang around the garage to keep the mice down in the garage.
Yeah.
But I really don't have a good answer for you. Otherwise, certainly you can look at some traps baited with peanut butter to help reduce the amount of mice that are in the garage and or wherever you keep your vehicle, particularly if it's enclosed area, so birds don't get in and get caught in the traps, should be fine. These are placed along the baseboard with the baited part at a right angle to the wall.
I parked this truck outside.
Okay, yeah, outside it's
really the mothballs. They don't last that long.
Yeah, in that type of situation, particularly where it's going to get warm, I'd be surprised if mothballs last more than 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, they're cheap.
Yeah, they are. They are inexpensive, at least.
That
might be as good an answer as any. But you've got a good point, and it's one that I've had, and I haven't really come up with a good answer on for my own situation. So I don't have much to suggest to you.
Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate your help.
All right. Uh-huh. Hey, thanks for the call. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Our guest is Phil Nixon, extension entomologist at UI. And every once in a while, he is here on the show. And we talk about dealing with pest problems around the home, primarily insect pests, but we get into some other mammalian pests as well. If you're having a problem, can be in the house, can be in the yard or the garden. Call in, give us the best description so we can get an idea of what it is. And then Phil will tell you, what he would suggest. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Another Champaign person here on line two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
I have a problem with ants.
Mm-hmm.
And they come on my kitchen sink.
Okay.
And
these like eighth-inch long, kind of reddish-brown?
No, they're tiny ants.
Okay. What color are they?
Black.
Okay. These are probably, these ants are, they may be odorous house ants, which odorous house ants tend to be quite fast moving.
Yes.
They will either nest outdoors, or they can also nest indoors. Generally, we look at controlling ants inside the house with baits, and depending on what ants are doing, they might be interested in one bait or another bait. Interesting thing is that with ants, the adults feed on sweet liquids, and so the adult ants are going to be attracted to a sweet bait such as taro bait, T-E-R-R-O, or Grant's ant bait. But if they happen to be building their colony and having a bunch of larvae in the nest, then they're going to be more interested in food for the larvae, and the larvae feed on protein, which is a fancy way of saying meat, okay? Mainly dead insects, things of this nature, but a protein bait, or a so-called grease ants, they would be called colloquially, a protein bait such as combat ant bait then will be effective. So We normally will recommend that you put out combat ant bait, which has fipronil in it, and this will be effective at in most cases. But if they don't seem to come to the bait, then try a sweet bait such as taro, which has boric acid in it, or Grant's ant bait, which has an arsenic compound in it. That should be effective at controlling them.
Well, what do? You buy these?
You buy these, and they come in. They're sold in hardware stores, even grocery stores.
Uh-huh.
Particularly the Grant's ant bait and the combat ant bait come in little plastic packages that are sealed, and there's openings that the ants can go in and not fingers. And they're told in the instructions to put them along baseboards and cracks and crevices where the ants are noticed, and they will find the bait. Feed on it. It's a slow-acting bait, so they take it back to the nest. All social insects feed each other. That's how they kind of keep their society together, transmitting hormones and so on, and food. And in the process, with this slow-acting poison, you essentially kill off the nest.
Okay, so when I go into the store, I ask for...
Combat ant bait.
Combat ant bait.
Just like you're in a war, combat.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Again, the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So if you're having a problem with ants, though, say that there are some people, like in our house, in the springtime, there's a period, then would you say that's when you really want to try the...
Combat.
That's the protein.
That's the protein bait.
Because they're building up.
Yeah, they would have gone through the winter on relatively small numbers of individuals living on stored food that they have. Remember the old Aesop fable, the ant and the grasshopper, the ant grabbers, all that sort of thing. Same thing works here. It's true. It's good nature. But the way you get through the winter on a limited amount of food is you don't have very many mouths to eat it. So they drop their population numbers in the fall through natural attrition. They just reduce the amount of larvae. And about this time of year, they're probably going to be reducing the amount of larvae that they have. So now you're looking at primarily a colony full of adults, which means they're more apt to go to the sweet baits, the taro or the Grant's ant bait. But in the spring, when they're starting to, they need more people, more ants, how I think of bugs, to go out and gather food. So build up the amount of larvae that you have, lay more eggs. The queen starts putting out more eggs in the spring, and you got more larvae. So they're looking for protein bait to feed those young larvae. They need baby food. So that's what you put out.
Yeah. And once you put them out, how long, generally speaking, would you think it would take?
Well, generally, if the ants will find it, and you'll notice them going in and out quite frequently because they tell other ants in the colony, come back and get more of this neat stuff. And so you get a lot of ants showing up. And usually within a week, you've pretty well noticed that the ants have gone away, sometimes as quick as 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. All right. We have another callers here. In fact, the lines are full, so we'll get right back to it, and we'll talk with some Urbana people now. Urbana line one right here. Hello.
Yes. I don't have a termite problem at present, but a basement on a concrete slab is framed in with non-treated lumber.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's anything I can do, proactively, just rather than tearing that out and putting in treated lumber, maybe to treat, what I have in there at present.
Certainly, there are materials that are sold at hardware stores and big box stores, home centers, et cetera. You have to ask for it, and they will order it. It will be called, the materials are called borates, B-O-R-A-T-E-S, and the most common brand name is Boracare, B-O-R-A-C-A-R-E. And the Boracare can be painted on or sprayed onto wood like that, and it's very water-soluble. It will soak into the wood probably about a quarter of an inch, but being very water soluble, it also washes out easily. So you need to protect it then from being washed away on external surfaces from rains and so on. And so you would coat that. Once that dries, you would then put a coating of paint or some sort of outdoor varnish or something of this nature to keep it from
inside.
If it's on the inside, you don't have to worry about it because you don't have any rain hitting it. And what it will do is that is permanent protection for the wood.
Okay.
It will last longer than the wood does. Okay. And it also protects against rot, by the way. The borates also are rot preventers, and rot killers, as a matter of fact. So that will be permanent solution to that type of situation. Elsewise, termites are very attracted to rotting wood and damp situations. So anything you can do to channel the water away from a house, which is what a lot of our building codes are all about, and making it so that you don't have, if you have the ability to put in something, a metal juncture in there, so you don't have a wood to cement contact, so you don't pick up the moisture that bleeds up through the cement, that will also help in reducing the attraction of to termites.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Line two is next. This is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yes. In like February or March, I had some, they were kind of a reddish-brown ant that came up through the drain pipe on the drain floor in the basement, or maybe through a crack where the stair.
Yeah, probably around a drain pipe, but still, yeah.
And there were these reddish ones, and they kind of flew. They would tend to swarm around there, and then sometimes they would fly a little bit.
Okay.
These
are likely to be foundation ants. These should have been about a quarter of an inch long.
Yeah, they're tiny little things.
Yeah, they're good size for ants, but, yeah, I live in a small world. at least my critters do. What this is called is the large yellow ant. The workers tend to be yellowish, but the adults tend to be reddish yellow or reddish looking, almost reddish brown sometimes. And an interesting feature of a foundation ant is that it lives outside in the soil, many times associated with soil aphids that feed on the roots of plants. And then in the wintertime, sometimes the entire colony will move inside a building and usually in the basement or in a crawl space, and they'll be underneath a board or a rock or something of this nature, and they will many times produce winged individuals during the wintertime because they feel it's warm and it must be spring and all this sort of thing. So you'll get these winged ants, and they will either fly too light to get out, or as they start not having enough to eat, to drink, they'll go to the only moisture source in the basement, which is probably the drain, and tend to die right there. And so this is something that's a transient thing. In the spring, the colony doesn't stay there. They move outside, find a place in the soil where there's some underground mealybugs or aphids to be near. This can happen.
They just come back in the winter again.
They just come back in the winter again, and there's, if you see them, vacuum them up, or if you want to spray them, you can, but vacuuming works just as well. And don't worry about them, otherwise they're not indicative of a long-term problem that's going to get worse.
Yeah, well, they've been there for about 10 years,
yeah.
And they just come.
Yeah, I found them two or three times in the crawl space in my basement before. Commonly, I find them in the spring when I get in there and start doing some things, moving things around, and I find all these dead winged individuals and realize that, yeah, I had a colony move in, and there's no trace of the workers anymore or of a larvae or anything else because they've all taken everything and moved it back outside by the time I start looking around in the spring.
I sometimes see them under the front door where,
okay,
there's a slab of the stoop.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And now I've noticed that my mortar there is not very good.
Yeah.
Would they damage the mortar?
No, they're not going to damage the mortar, although if there's cracks in it, they may flake out little pieces of it that are loose to make a little bit more of an opening there, but they're not going to cause a large gap to form. That would probably be due to movements of the soil and the loss of the integrity of that joint. We have a similar thing next to our back door where we live, and several times we've had adult large numbers of winged individuals come out there, and my wife and I take giant steps when we go in and out of a back door so we don't squash any more ants, and absolutely necessary. We don't do anything about it. They're gone in three or four days.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Very good. And we'll go on to the next caller. This would be line number three, and that is Champagne. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I just wanted to add that I have found the best bait for traps for mice is a piece of bacon fat.
Bacon works quite well. Peanut butter is usually a little better.
Well, they eat the peanut butter off and leave the trap.
Well, they don't do it so well if you put the peanut butter on the underside of a bait tray. Then they have to get underneath and lick on it. Before long, they've moved the bait tray enough that they're dead. So there's a little trick to that. But certainly bacon works well, and if they're stealing it, then you take a little piece of thread and tie it on. That makes it so that you're more apt to catch the mouse. Sweet chocolates work well too. If you get
I'm
chocolates for Christmas,
chocolate
well, sometimes you get an assorted box of chocolates and you don't like a particular one, so you use those for mouse bait.
Well, I hadn't thought of that. Right.
Or you haven't found a chocolate you didn't like. One of the two. Yeah.
Well, I just found that I catch more mice with bacon than I do with peanut butter.
And that's an excellent bait. Certainly, all of those are much better than what you can find. You know, despite what Mickey Mouse says. Mice really don't like cheese that much. They prefer
no,
other
don't.
Things.
Okay, well, that's my contribution for
All
this.
Right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. We have about 10 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580. Phil Nixon is the guest. He's an entomologist with U of I Extension and is here on the program every once in a while. Generally, we ask him to come in the spring and in the summer to help people with insect pest problems around the home. So if it's something that, as we always like to say, can you live with this? If the answer is no, I cannot live with this, then Phil will tell you what to do. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You might think this is a guy that does not like insects. This is not the case.
Okay.
This is a guy who likes insects. But, you know, sometimes
yeah,
if they're in the house.
Well, you can tell when I talk about taking giant steps going out of my back door so I don't smash too many ants. You know, if you don't like those, vacuum cleaner takes care of them, or you could spray them with a flying crawl and insect spray. But for my wife and I, we're both biologists. We just take giant steps and try not to smash too many. And 2 or 3 days, they're gone. No big deal. Let it go.
All right. Champagne is next. Line one right here. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a small question. How does one get rid of bed bugs in a house?
Bed bugs in a house, first off, it's not an easy thing to get rid of, and that's one thing you have to start thinking about. Many times you get involved with using a pest control company and realize that if you do involve them, and it's useful to do so, particularly for this, that this is not going to be one of their cheaper things because it's going to take multiple trips and a lot of time. And so their prices are several times what you're used to paying maybe for roaches or ants or something like this. But controlling bed bugs primarily involves reducing clutter to start with, so there's less areas for the bed bugs to hide in, particularly if you have somebody come in and treat for bed bugs. That's going to be very critical. Generally, the bed bugs, they come out at night to feed on our blood. And they're going to be, the bed bugs themselves get up to about 1/4 inch across, and they're very flattened and anywhere from tan to dark brown in color. They feed in the early morning hours, and we don't wake up when they're feeding. We may be fed upon for several weeks or months before we start showing any bite marks associated with it. So they can build up before we realize we have them for that reason. They hide in cracks and crevices in the daytime. And they like to hide primarily in cracks and crevices associated with the mattress and the beds and the springs. And we recommend you can kill them on those surfaces with steam, particularly dry steam. Many pest control companies are investing in dry steam generator machines to help kill the bed bugs and the eggs and so on associated with that. This also works well in cracks and crevices associated with a bedstead, the nightstand, cracks and crevices next to the bed. They can be as much as 30 feet away from a bed, but by far, almost most of them are going to be within 5 to 6 feet of a bed. Enclose the mattress and box springs in a bed bug proof cover. The most effective one on the market today is called Protect a Bed. And Protect a Bed, bed covers can be purchased over the internet if you can't find them locally. I haven't seen them locally. But they have a locking zipper on them, which keeps the bed bugs from getting in around that area that can release and open a little bit of a gap. They do have, you can put the feet of a bed onto sticky traps, things that you can buy like Roach Motel things to help trap and kill the bed bugs when they're coming to you at night. Treat cracks and crevices with an aerosol flying crawling insect spray. You pretty well got to hit them on contact to kill them with that. Rotate those every couple, 3 months. Do that treatment every 2 weeks to a month. If you have a pest control company come in, that's what they're going to do. They're going to have better products. The best product on the market today is called Phantom. But even Phantom has been shown to have resistance. Every insecticide that we have to control bed bugs that is labeled, they are resistant to, okay? So this is why I'm going through all of this steam heating and bed protection, et cetera, because we don't have an easy answer to spray and take care of a problem. And if you happen, and typically the bed bugs will live, like I said, up to 30 feet away, a few of them, and so they're going to be in adjacent rooms as well, but if you treat around the bed, they got to come back to the bed to get something to eat, unless you have pets, and they will also feed on dogs and cats, birds, et cetera. So those are all features. If you live in an apartment and the landlord is trying to control them, or the landlord's working with you, or you're working with other apartment dwellers, the bed bugs are likely to be in the apartment above, below, and on all sides of your apartment. So those people need to know about it and be doing something about it as well. Those are all reasons why bed bugs are hard to control.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And it would appear that they're on the increase.
Like they are on the increase.
More of a problem than they have been in the past.
But still relatively uncommon. Hmm. I mean, it's a situation where if you start thinking about it, something that comes out at night and sucks your blood, you know, that's kind of like vampires.
Sort of. Yeah.
And you don't, that's really icky to people. And I understand that. It's icky to me. Yeah. So it makes good press. They are increased. Pest control companies will say, we've had an increase of 5,000%. Well, it sounds like an awful lot. But considering that most pest control companies before about 3 years ago didn't even know what a bed bug looked like because they were so uncommon, that type of an increase still makes them relatively uncommon. They are found easily. A lot of people have them, but the vast majority of people do not. Okay. And that's one thing to kind of keep in mind. And some of the problems are is some of the chemicals that have been very effective have been taken off the market.
All right. Let's go on here. We'll go next to Champagne. That's line two. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Phil. This is I'm interested in the effect of the Asian longhorn beetles on ash trees. I have a young ash, probably 15 years old, a little over a foot in diameter that I've been treating with this Bayer systemic.
Uh-huh. Tree and shrub insect control.
Yeah, and I've been doing that in the spring, mm-hmm. not when it rains 3 or 4 inches. But can you let me know, is applying this systemic on ash trees going to continue to protect it as it gets larger? Because it's very healthy right now. And can you give us an update on the progression of the longhorn beetle into Champagne?
Okay, in the first place, we're looking at emerald ash borer here. Asian longhorn beetle is an insect which attacks living maple trees, and we've come close to eradicating it in the state up in the Chicago area. The one that attacks the ash trees is going to be emerald ash borer. We picked it up last year. The closest was in Bloomington and Chenoa, both of them in McLean County or at the edge with Iroquois County. The traps, purple egg turtle traps that have been out are being taken down at this point or soon and will be being read. So we really haven't heard of any new infestations in Illinois for several months or at least several weeks that haven't been up in the areas that normally are infested. We've had some new infestation areas in the Chicago metro area, but they're generally in areas where we would expect them to show up. They're close by and so on. The imidacloprid, the Bayer tree and shrub insect control, Bayer advanced tree and shrub insect control, is effective for about a year after application, a little more than a year actually. And it's useful for small infestations, those that may be showing, if you don't have them in your neighborhood yet, that's a good thing to use. But particularly, we don't recommend any treatment unless emerald ash borer has been found within 15 miles of where you live. So for the Champaign-Urbana area, we're still not recommending control yet at this time, but certainly we would in McLean County, for instance. Once the emerald ash borer gets here in large numbers and trees are dying in your neighborhood, it's been found in your neighborhood, then you need to switch over to triage, spelled as TREAGE, TREAGE. This is amimectin benzoate, which is injected into the tree by a professional, and it will provide protection for 2 years. Provides a much higher level of control than the imidacloprid that's in the homeowner applied or even professionally injected imidacloprid materials, but it's still good enough if you don't have a high infestation. But it should protect a tree at least until it's got a trunk diameter of 14 inches or so. Once it gets above that, control becomes more problematic, and for very large trees, the ones we'd most likely to keep and not lose, we're probably going to lose them regardless of what we do.
So the emerald ash borer is, I mean, it's not if it comes, it's
when.
It's going to come at some point.
Yeah, yeah, there's enough ash trees that eventually on its own it will get here. It only moves a half a mile a year, so if it had to get here on its own from McLean County, it'd take 100 years. It'll get here sooner than that because somebody will move firewood or something and it'll bring it in. We recommend that you only use firewood that's cut locally.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, we'll try to get one more, and that would be Naperville. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a problem with carpenter ants.
Okay.
And the question is, can they be eradicated from the house by a perimeter control?
They can and they cannot be. if many times you'll have carpenter ants in decaying wood of a dead tree or a dead tree limb, and they will come in and may make a satellite nest inside a house or just come in to gather food. In that situation, yeah, they can be controlled with perimeter control and also pruning back branches so they don't have any within 3 feet of a house roof, which they also drop off onto the house. But generally, you're going to have a carpenter ant nest in some wood that is damp or has been damp when they attacked. Due to a leaky water drain pipe or a leaky roof, and finding that location and either replacing the wood and or soaking it with an aerosol ant and roach spray should eradicate the ants. But you need to kind of, if you've been in a house for at least 5 years, you probably know where the nest is. It's probably some area that got some moisture damage about that long ago.
Hey, thanks.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, there, we got to leave it for this point and say thanks to our guest, Phil Nixon. He's extension entomologist with UVI. If you have these kind of questions, probably the best thing to do would be look in your phone book and find your closest extension person.
In the white pages under University of Illinois or under the county under University of Illinois Extension.
So they can help you out, and if they can't, then Phil's the guy they call.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here. We appreciate it.